The Great Barrier Reef is one of the world's most beautiful and precious ecosystems, stretching more than 2,400 kilometres along the eastern coast of Australia. Its beauty and vastness can even be seen from space. That is all coming under threat, though, with the impacts of climate change, eroding coral and decimating ecosystems, the marine life that once inhabited it. But it's not all doom and gloom. Scientists have been working hard to understand these changes and what can be done to mitigate them. Here for a chat about saving the Great Barrier Reef, Australian Marine Institute Chief Executive Paul Hardesty. Thank you for joining me on Breakfast this morning. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. So I'd like to start by asking you, what impact does our changing climate have on the Great Barrier Reef?
Look, climate change has pretty much emerged as the single biggest threat to the future of the Great Barrier Reef, not only the GBR, but all of the world's reefs and all of the reefs in Western Australia as well.
And significantly, in terms of climate change, is it the temperature? Is it the water temperature? Is it a combination of a bunch of factors?
Yeah. Look, it's two things. First, and most immediate is increasing temperatures. So climate change is making the marine heat waves that cause the bleaching episodes that your listeners have probably heard about recently,
yep,
in the news and what have you. That's what drives it, is that corals are very, very sensitive to temperature. And when the temperature goes up, basically what happens is that their symbiont, which is the zooxanthellae, the algae that lives inside them, inside the coral skeleton, starts to basically go into overdrive, produces too many free radicals, and starts to toxify the coral, and it ejects the symbiont, and they can't live without each other. And so that coral bleaching you see is the algae being expelled. The algae gives the coral its beautiful color, and then when it's expelled, all you have left is that pure white crystalline calcium skeleton.
Not a great look.
No, it's pretty crazy to see underwater, because actually what happens just as they're going through that stress is they fluoresce. It's actually incredibly beautiful. You get all these fluorescent colors, like fluorescent purple and blue and yellow and green and orange, vibrating. And it's almost like, you know, it's so beautiful when it's ill. And then they're expelled, and it goes deathly white. And then a few weeks later, if the zooxanthellae, if the symbiont doesn't come back into the coral, they die. And then they get covered in algae and they crumble away and they just look, you know, they're all black and covered in algae. And yeah, that's when it looks really, really sad.
Yeah.
So there's this cycle of bleaching and then death and mortality, but they don't have to die. So bleached coral aren't necessarily dead. There's a window where if the symbiont comes back in, the algae comes back in,
mm-hmm,
which it happens a lot, then they're okay. The 2020 bleaching event, the one we had before the one that's just occurred this summer, most of the coral that bleached eventually survived, which was good news.
It's great news. Yeah, so aerial surveys of the entire reef were set to be conducted by the end of March, I believe. What were the results of that?
Yeah, so we completed those aerial surveys just a few weeks ago, and we found that there was pretty extensive bleaching in the north and in the middle sections of the reef. And so according to how we define bleaching, it was called another mass bleaching event on the Great Barrier Reef this year. So you can fly over, and when it goes that ghostly white, you can see it really, really clearly from the air. So we have methods and protocol for scoring the reefs, and we flew all of the reef, the lengths and the breadths of the reef, north to south, and from the coast all the way out to the fringe.
So can a natural habitat like the reef be restored? I know you mentioned previously that there is a window of opportunity there, but if we leave it too long, is it too late?
Yeah, so there's the restoration, really, you can look at it in two different ways. The first one is the one I just mentioned, is the natural reestablishment or the expelled symbiont returns to the coral skeleton, and it'll do that alone. It'll do that in a few weeks after it's bleached. If it's going to happen, it'll happen naturally. And then the coral will recover. We're hopeful that this latest mass bleaching event will be a lot more like 2020 in character than the really bad events of 2016 and 17, where a lot of the coral bleached and then died,
right,
particularly in the north and central sections of the reef.
Right.
So the longer-term recovery is something that we're looking at as a collective of Australian science organizations, including AIMS, but including universities and CSIRO, funded by the Commonwealth government. Our program is called the Reef Restoration and Adaptation Program. It's the largest effort of its kind ever undertaken anywhere in the world, and it's designed to see, can science help us to help reefs adapt to warming conditions, which we know are getting worse as we go forward in time, and which we know these events are coming closer and closer together, which is also a problem because naturally when reefs are hit by something like a cyclone, which can be devastating, we've seen that even though you can have really high mortality, like 90% coral loss over a decade, that reef can come back to almost where it was before, but it takes a decade. Now we seem to be getting these bleaching events coming every 2 years,
yeah,
every 3 years. It's just not enough time for them to recover on their own. So we're looking at a range of methods to help them recover faster, but also to adapt to warming conditions. So can they survive temperature increases that they couldn't before?
Right.
And we've had some pretty cool breakthroughs already.
I'm speaking this morning with Australian Maritime Institute Chief Executive Paul Hardesty in regards to saving the Great Barrier Reef. And Paul, can you talk us through the significance of last month's UN decision regarding the heritage status of the reef?
Well, as far as I know, they haven't made a decision yet. They had come with a reactive monitoring mission, experts dispatched by the World Heritage Commission had come. They visited the reef. They talked to scientists, including Australian Institute of Marine Science, us, and they've now gone back to their headquarters and they're preparing a report, which will be heard by the commission.
So on that note, what's next? Is there a hope for a thriving future for the reef? You know, what are governments doing? What should they be doing?
Well, look, my personal opinion, and it's not shared by everybody, but I'm an optimist. I believe that we still have time to make sure that we have functioning, beautiful coral reefs on this planet for the foreseeable future. But there's two things that have to happen for that to occur. The first one is that we absolutely have to drive down global greenhouse gas emissions. That's what's driving the increased incidence of marine heat waves, which is causing the bleaching. By the way, it's also causing a longer-term problem, which is ocean acidification, which you might have heard about.
Yep.
Same thing, the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere dissolves into the ocean and creates more acidic conditions. And acidic conditions aren't good for anything that forms a calcite skeleton, including corals and a lot of other marine creatures. But we won't get into that today. That's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
But on the warming issue, which is the more immediate one, we have to get emissions under control. Because anything that we can do, anything that we scientists can unlock in terms of new methods to help corals and coral reefs survive, will be swamped by increased temperatures if we don't get that under control. We need to do both now. We're already getting this damage with the amount of CO2 we've got in the atmosphere now. So the problem exists already. Any additional warming that we get from emissions that occur in the future is only going to make the problem worse. But we're already getting these bleaching events every few years now. It's far too many for reefs to really cope with. So we've got to do both. We've got to adapt and we've got to reduce emissions. And we've got to do it pretty fast.
Yep. Yep. And that was Australian Institute of Marine Science Chief Executive Paul Hardesty chatting about what can be done to save our Great Barrier Reef. Paul, thank you very much. It was a very lovely and insightful conversation, and I think it's pretty clear we've got to act now and we've got to act fast.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me on today. Appreciate it.